but need not be. Chinese party and military leaders are not so reckless as to believe there is nothing to lose by attacking Taiwan. U.S. and Chinese diplomacy have largely been successful at maintaining the status quo and avoiding violent confrontations. Thus, while there is no crisis, false alarms help create one. I'm Mel Gertoff of The Global Citizen. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to a spring membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, April 30th, 2024. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes David Rosenberg, Doug McVeigh, Reed Johnson, and Birdie. The producers are Matea Carlin and Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Eric Tagadoff, Antonia Gonzalez, Farah Siddiqui, and Mike Moen. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Eric Leuschner. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. KBOO is currently in our spring membership drive, so now is a great time to join. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to the number 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth.
Listeners, sponsored stations count on you, not Arbitron. So when you push their buttons, you get radio that turns you on.
Hi there, this is Ann Feeney, and you are listening to listener-supported community radio, KBOO FM in Portland.
Hello, my name is TK Kapurura and I'm an immigrant from Zimbabwe. I'm the host of The Global Cell, which airs live in the air room the first Wednesday of the month at 7 p.m. I host immigrants and refugees from various global spots. I like to bring out their lived experiences so the world can know something about them. I like to bring a lot through my guests so we may have diverse experiences, cultures, foods, music, interests, and anything on the platform. We can share and learn a lot through their live instructions. Let's do this together, not only for a better platform for our community, but a better community for our platform. Again, tune in for my show, The Global Cell, live in the air room, the first Wednesday of the month at 7 p.m. here on KBOO 90.7 FM Portland, and also available on the web at kboo.fm.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You're listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Birdie. In the debate over Social Security, proposals for maintaining the program have come from all across the political spectrum. Many of the proposals are familiar to those who have followed the debate. KBOO contributor David Rosenberg spoke with independent activist and thinker Jabari Zakia, whose idea for saving Social Security would probably be considered a little outside of the box for what's usually proposed.
So Social Security, sometimes we hear conservatives talk about it and they say, well, what needs to happen is we need to raise the retirement age or we need to cut the benefits. Or the progressives will say, well, there's no problem really. All we have to do is raise the cap on taxable income. But you're saying something different. What are you saying? What's wrong with those arguments?
My starting point is different. My starting point is, what effect is the tax system having on different demographics of people? And particularly, how is the tax system becoming more onerous or is onerous to poor people and exacerbating poverty? In other words, the structure of the American tax system is creating poverty. And it's making it worse for people who have been designated to be poor.
It's supposed to be a progressive tax system.
Well,
it's supposed to tax the rich more than the poor. But what's happening there?
Well, I'm not going to get into labels because that's irrelevant to me. The only thing that's relevant is what's happened in the real world to real people. Everything else is BS. So the bottom line is, if you're poor, anything being taken out of somebody who has been designated to be poor is a travesty. Because the whole point of saying someone is poor, it means that they have been designated to not have enough money to live a certain quality of life in this country. So if you're poor or even middle class, you get those classifications because at the level of earnings that you have available to spend, you don't have much of a life. And you're struggling to live a normal high quality of life than people who make significantly more earnings. That's the whole thing. So I'm starting from an economic basis on the effects on real people. So you have a system that has been created by mostly white males over history that is designed to benefit white males, particularly white males that work and have families. So without regard to other demographics. So when the federal government created Social Security, it was only funded, they didn't have FICA. There was no such thing as FICA, which is Federal Insurance Compensation Act. I think that's what it came in. So Social Security was started in 1935. And at that time, most people never paid income taxes because it was designed to be a tax on people with, quote, high income. And income is a legal term. It's not what you think it means. Income is not wages. Wages are not income. Wages is compensation for services rendered. Income is defined by the Supreme Court as a corporate profit. That's why they call it income, because you have all these corporations making all this revenue, but they claim to have no taxable income because it's a fungible number. It's not how much money you bring in. It's a calculable number based on a lot of different things like deductions and costs and stuff. It's a corporate money. It's a corporate designation and not a personal designation. So anyway, when they started FICA after World War II, because the population was growing, the population was getting older. You had people coming back from the war, World War II. So you had all these veterans, you had all this total different change in the working demographics of the country. In World War II, you had this great influx of women into the workforce. Their husbands, their brothers, the males were out fighting. A lot of them didn't come back. A lot of them didn't come back whole, mentally, physically. And once the women went into the workforce, a large majority of them said, we don't want to stop working. So they changed the system of Social Security. And to fund this greater pool of people, they created FICA, which was a direct tax on wages. But when they did that, and subsequently since they've done that, there was no consideration on the effect that directly taxing people's wages had on the demographics of the people that they were taxing. Because what they did, they put a cap on the amount of wages subject to FICA. And that cap has been going up, has been rising. So they acknowledge or they created a benefit for people who made more and more money. The more money you make, the less of your earnings would be subject to FICA. So if you made above the cap, less than 100% of your earnings would be subject to FICA. If you make below the cap, 100% of everything you work is subject to FICA. That's a class distinction. That's an ideological distinction that they made so that they didn't care about people who made earnings below the cap, but they did care about the people who made earnings below the cap. And at the time, the majority of the people were white males who had high-paying jobs, because at the time they did it, most females still were not in the workforce, and those that were not making money above the cap. So it's always been a class type of consideration, but the class was only for benefit of generally white males who made these high wage earnings. So this creates poverty. So everybody who works below the poverty, below the cap, is subject to 100% of their salary being subject to this direct tax. Now, there's two parts of the FICA withholding. There's the part that funds Social Security, which is currently 6.2%. And then there's a part that funds Medicare, which is 1.45%, for a total of 7.65%. So for most people, they have 7.65% of their salaries being taken out. So for every $100 you make, $7.65 is taken out, which is matched by your employer. So your wherever you work, you know, Pacifica or whatever, for every $100, they take out 7.65% for FICA, and the employer is supposed to match the 7.65% for a total of 15.3%. Now, again, that's without regard to your financial status. The first dollar you make every year is subject to this. So obviously, this is unfair to people who are not only designated by the federal government to be poor in the first place, but to most middle-class people, because, again, the majority of the people who work will never see their salaries go above the cap. And the cap for 2024 was raised to $168,600. In 2023, it was $160,000 plus some change. So that's a almost a $9,000 jump in the cap from 1 year, from 2023 to 2024, which tells you that the system is broken, because if there was any kind of continuity in the system, you wouldn't need a $9,000 jump in 1 year to make up what they project to be Social Security shortfalls. But you also have to understand there is no cap on the 1.45% that is taken out for Medicare. So if you make $100,000 a year, if you make $200,000, you make $1 million in salary, all of that salary is subject to the 1.45% Medicare. So what does that tell you? It tells you ideologically, Congress cares more about funding Medicare than it does about funding Social Security. And that's Democrats and Republicans. So what I propose, and I call that system a cap with no floor. In other words, everybody from the first dollar you make every year, first dollar is subject to the total FICA withholding until you reach the cap. And the cap for 2024 is $168,600. So once you make above $168,600 in 2024, you will no longer be subject to the 6.2% Social Security part of the FICA payment. You will still be paying the 1.45% for Medicare. That's a political decision. It has nothing to do with economics. Because obviously, why don't they keep the cap for the Social Security? Because Congress doesn't want to fund Social Security. That's the only reasonable answer you can come to that, because they didn't take the cap off. There's no cap for Medicare. So that's a cap with no floor. What I propose is a floor with no cap. So where the floor with no cap is, and I've set the cap for $50,000. And the reason I picked $50,000 is because if you go into the tables for the poverty level, a household with eight children, the poverty level will be considered to be $50,000. In other words, if you don't make $50,000, you have eight kids, the federal government's consider you to be poor. Well, obviously, you're poor well before you make that. So what I propose is to flip the script and say, okay, everybody, until and unless you make $50,000 a year, none of your wages are subject to FICA, Social Security, or the Medicare part of FICA. Once you make above $50,000, then there is no cap on the Social Security portion, because there's no cap on Medicare, and your full wages will be subject to 7.65%. Now, this would immediately untax all the poor people, because by designation, they're poor because they didn't make enough money to live any kind of quality of life. And it will untax most middle-class people, because most middle-class people and families won't hit the $168,600 cap for 2024. So this would, through a single social policy, increase the economic viability of the majority of people in this country, because the majority of the people in this country fall way below the $168,600 cap in yearly earnings. And at the same time, though, it would capture all of this money that is continually going to the top 1%, 5%, 2%, and capture all of that revenue and raise much more money than the Social Security system is raising now. But it will be raising it from the people who will be least hurt by it and most able to pay it. And in fact, if you put in a floor with no cap system, you can lower the 6.2% current Social Security percentage down to something closer to the Medicare, because you have a greater pool of revenue to take from. So that's it.
Have you gotten any response from the people in Congress you've probably contacted about this?
I sent out my paper to over half the members of the Ways and Means Committee, where all tax legislation comes from, including all the Black ones. I sent it to over half the Black caucus members. And when I say sent it, I called the office, got the email of the person who deals with these issues, and sent it to them. I've only gotten two or three responses back.
Is it too soon to expect a response? How long?
No, it's not too soon. None of this stuff is too soon.
How long ago did you contact?
I finished the paper and start sending it out after January 15th, because the final version of the paper was dated January 15th. So the end of January and most of February, which is Black History Month, I sent it out. And I had one meeting. The only meeting with a staff person I had was with Eleanor Holmes Norton's staff person. And Eleanor Holmes Norton is the non-voting delegate for Washington, D.C., where I live. And he understood it, but she didn't seem. I got a form letter back from her. And I sent it to, like I said, I sent it to all the Black members on the House Ways and Means Committee, no response. I sent it to a lot of the people, the so-called progressive people who claim to be progressives in the Progressive and Black Caucus. I sent it to the Squad, AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Rashida Tlaib and all of them. I haven't gotten a response.
You think it's because they're of the mindset that they have to keep resisting Republican attempts to mess with Social Security? I mean, even Biden in the past has talked about, Obama also talked about cutting Social Security. So do you think the progressives are just intent on preserving what is apparently still a very popular program and preventing Republican cuts? Is that why they can't identify that box?
You would have to ask them, because I can't speak for them. All I know is this proposal is so simple to understand. It is so clear on the benefits to the majority of the people in this country who are poor and middle class. There's really no excuse for no Democrat or anybody who actually says they care for poor people and women, because, again, women, they have the pay disparity gap that they lack, and they're the majority of the caregivers, not only for children, but for family members and so forth. There's really no excuse. Just to me, there's no excuse, and I'm not going to accept the excuse, because you're too cowardly to promote an idea that promotes people's welfare because you're afraid of what the Republic's going to say. You don't belong in Congress, really, because if you don't have a backbone, then why are you there? Why are you there when you can, with a simple policy change and how Social Security is funded, you could free up so many people and at the same time make the system solvent forever. That's a no-brainer. And if you're not smart enough to understand that, or if you're too cowardly to push for that, then you're not a progressive. You're just there to hold a job, because you got to fight for everything. People die for people to get in Congress. And they didn't die for them to get in the Congress, so they would just basically want to float because they don't want to fight. If you just care about re-elections all the time, then you need to get another job, as far as I'm concerned. So I don't want to hear any excuses from anybody. I don't hear excuses from Republicans. I don't hear excuses from Democrats. I don't hear excuses from anybody.
Could it be that it's not so much that they're afraid, it's just that they don't know how to deal with new ideas, and it'll take some time before your idea settles in and people realize that it makes sense?
No, they have no problem paying, sending money to Ukraine or Israel.
Their sort of normal frame of reference, and you've introduced something new that you're saying is simple, and they hear it, but they don't know what to do with it because it's usually debate about.
No, see, I don't know. You're making suppositions that I don't agree with.
I'm just trying to speculate on why they might ignore your proposal.
Well, you don't have to speculate. You can call them up and say, "Hey, this is proposal to change Social Security so it doesn't increase poverty and makes the system solvent forever." You don't have to speculate. No, it's a speculation. All you got to do is ask the people directly. Why don't you support that?
Can you see any disadvantage to your proposal at all?
No. To who? It would be a disadvantage to people who currently don't have to pay above the $168,000 a year. Those are only groups of people that would be quote unquote disadvantaged, and the small group of people who make money off of those people. But they're not going to be disadvantaged in the classical sense. They may be annoyed, they may be irritated, but their life is not going to change.
What do you think your next step will be in trying to get this proposal off the ground?
Doing what I'm doing now, sending it out, that's what I'm doing. But until some of these groups that claim they're for poor people and seniors, the AARPs, I sent it to the Urban League in D.C. I haven't heard a response back from them. I sent it to the NAACP. I haven't heard a response back to them.
Have you tried the Green Party or any?
I sent it to the Green Party in D.C. There has been individual. I sent it to Jill Stein. I sent it to her campaign. I haven't gotten any kind of formal response back. So what I'm trying to say is the whole point of being in Congress is either you're looking for new ideas or you're just rubber stamping stuff, because that's what people do. They rubber stamp old stuff. And the stuff that they rubber stamp is not good for the majority of people in many cases. This proposal is so simple to understand. If you claim you don't understand it, you don't belong in Congress. So the only assessment you can make is they don't care about poor people and they don't care to make the system solvent, because every year people keep telling Congress, why do you have a cap on Social Security when you don't have a cap on the Medicare part? It's pure ideology, Democrats and Republicans. It's pure ideology. It has nothing to do with math. It has nothing to do with economics. It has to do with the fact that the Republicans outright don't want a public system to fund Social Security, and the Democrats by default accept that. That's all you have to say.
Anything else you want to add?
Like most things to get through Congress, until you have a sufficient groundswell of people from the grassroots level, this probably won't get much traction, because again, Congress members individually and in groups don't seem to want to actually do something on these issues. And of course, this Congress that's about to end is the worst Congress in decades. I think they said that they've only passed 27 pieces of legislation this whole 2-year term. And for whatever reasons, the House Democrats, who structurally can't get anything passed because they're a minority, but they could structurally promote these ideas like this idea, and that would galvanize people to come to the polls and vote. And that's a deficiency on the Democratic Party, because you may not have the numbers to get stuff passed in the House, but you can surely promote the ideas that would invigorate people to say, hey, yeah, they say they're going to flip Social Security so I don't have to pay because I'm poor and middle class. Yeah, I'll come out and vote for that. And for whatever reasons, they don't seem to have the political acumen to understand that you get people to come out to vote because you show them something to vote for. You give them an incentive. If we come into power, we're going to do A, B, C, D, E. That's why Biden now is going around talking about birth control and abortion. And that's what all the Democrats are going to do, probably toward the end, if they're not already doing it. But they could get those swing voters. They can get the Haley Never Trumpers and all these other people who are looking at Kennedy or whoever else. If they had the intelligence to say, you know what, we could make the system economically better for all poor people and most middle class people, and at the same time have a mechanism to fund Social Security forever and hurt hardly anybody. And if that's not a no-brainer win, a two-for-two, decrease poverty and increase Social Security, I don't know what it is. What else do you need to convince these people if logic and math doesn't incentivize them to do the right thing?
Sometimes these ideas start out and nobody's listening, but they do catch on sometimes.
Well, Dave, with the millions of people who listen to you, we're going to...
Yeah. This is,
no, I mean, but no. See, how long did it take you to understand? I sent it to you one day, you contact me the next, right? I'm trying to tell you, people who read the proposal understand it immediately. I'm talking about regular people. If you're in academics or you're a politician, you read it and you understand it immediately. And then you have to, then the gears start to grind in your head and say, well, should I promote this? Does it conflict with my ideology? You start to ask all these kinds of questions because your highest priority is not to help poor people.
Do you know if this kind of proposal was ever considered before? Was it ever brought up for debate?
No, not that I know of. When I contacted Jamie Raskin, House in Maryland, his aide who deals with this emailed me and said that this was kind of like some things that he was thinking about proposing, but that was the end of it. Because I asked to meet with her and said, well, look, I want to go down in detail, not only the economics, not only the math, but the political and the sociological effects and da-da-da-da-da. I mean, these people are not stupid. There are some very smart people. And I'm not talking about the Congress people. I'm talking about the aides, because you got to go through the aides first. The aides are not stupid people. In fact, the person who was with Jamie Raskin was, I saw her thing. She was a PhD in economics or political whatever. These are not light-headed people. They can read it as just like you read it and instantly understand the ramifications of it. So it doesn't take anybody more than the time it takes to read the paper. And I kept it short on purpose. I only made it, the published version is only 4 pages. The one I originally did was 5 pages. I kept it short on purpose because you don't need to go into a long-winded, detailed explanation. It explains itself. And the longer you write it, the less they'll read it anyway. So you keep it short, you keep it simple. I put the graphs in there. I put the URL so if people wanted to see the motivating research behind the policy, is right there. Everything is right there. It's a click away. Just go on in and click, 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 click. You'll see all the articles. You'll see the studies. You know, studies other people have made. And I just pulled it all together.
That's activist and researcher Jabari Zakia speaking with KBOO contributor David Rosenberg about some out-of-the-box ideas for saving Social Security. For KBOO News in Depth, I'm Bertie.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
Postmodern, a reaction against the ideas and values of modernism. Avant-garde, new, unusual, and experimental ideas. KBOO.